You can by all means go make all the mistakes on your own. You can. That's going to be hard to come back from. Like, if it were, if that were the way to do it, I would have made it years ago. Find a mentor. But the other thing is, he made a comment to the extent of like being able to like, congrats, like you can shoot well. Good. That gets you a ticket to the party. But once you get there, you gotta dance on your own. You gotta do all the extra stuff on your own. The being able to shoot part is the standard, right? But the issue is most people have been below the standard for a long time, right? You have to be able to shoot well. You have to be able to teach well. You have to be able to put those two sides of doing and knowing, and you have to put it in the middle, wrap it up nicely, and deliver it to somebody carefully. But I remember reading.
Yeah, but like for a while, I'd have like if I needed to PayPal somebody, because some people like if you're paying like before Venmo and all that, like PayPal was basically all you had. I'd have to use Maddie's account.
Oh, I still haven't caught it with all the other pay apps and stuff.
Venmo's kind of cool. I like Venmo. Yeah,
my wife uses Venmo.
My wife uses Venmo all the time. I use it like 4 times a year. Yeah. I have an account, but like I never use it. My wife's always like paying my sisters or you know, whoever, and or getting money. You know, like. It's an easy way to exchange money, but
there's a lot of Venmo that happens here for lunch. Everybody runs around.
That's what she uses it for a lot. Is like Ian pays for lunch, and then she uses Venmo's and like $15 or whatever.
Well, that's the funny part. Like when I buy something on the internet, and that's my first because I have PayPal, I can do that. It's simple. I've been doing it for a decade now, and then the other person will be like, "Well, I'm good with PayPal," and they're like, "Well, I have Venmo or Zelle or something." Yeah. I'm just like,
you know what? The wife kids, involved. You know what the kids are using these days? Apple Pay.
I have that.
I've never gotten Apple Pay. Yeah. Like
it's pretty. So they're about to kill it.
Really?
It's about to go away. Yeah. The Goldman Sachs bank that backed Apple for the credit line is losing so much money, like an astronomical amount of money. So yeah, they're about to do away. It's the first major Apple failure of the business. Yeah.
Huh. I just started feeling bad that I never used it.
Better log on to get one today.
I know.
That and the lightning plug, now that they're going to USB-C.
Oh, yeah, USB-C.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome.
They still have like a $45 future charger or cable that they're...
Yeah. And then burning out batteries if you use the laptop charger on the phone.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it charges it really quick, but it will burn your battery.
Everybody's like,
oh, shit.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, it'll kill your battery. Like, really? Look at your battery life thing in your settings. And every time... It won't happen like every time, but like I've had my phone for... a year now. It's probably time for another one.
Yeah.
My battery runs out in 7-8 hours.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's just too much power.
Yeah.
And it keeps a load on it once it goes to 100%. So, find these things out. Expensively.
Speaking of batteries, like we're getting way off topic here. Are we even recording?
We are.
Okay.
Cool. Oh, we are recording.
Yeah,
okay.
We are.
Right. Make sure you're not saying anything stupid.
Yeah. No, I was watching something like a little short of a podcast. I think there's Rogan and Elon Musk, but he was like talking about like how the lithium batteries charge. Like he was saying basically it's shorter to go from 0 to 80% than it is from 80 to 100%, because basically it's like, I think the analogy that he used was it's like the ions or whatever. Somebody's going to correct me. That was probably not even the battery juice thing. It's like a car looking for a spot in a parking lot. So like 0 to 80%, there's like a lot of parking spots open. So it's just whips right in there. Yeah. But then the 80 to 100%, it might be 70-30, whatever it is. But the it's like in a crowded parking lot. It's got to drive around for a little bit to find a parking spot to charge.
So
that battery
fill up like a cup.
Yeah. No. Exactly. Yeah. It's very front loaded on the front end. There's a lot. It's a lot faster to get, you know, to that 80%, than the last 20% takes just as long, if not longer.
Interesting.
But they need the little parking stuff like at the airport where it says level 6.
Have you ever flown
spots
out of IA out of Houston, out of Bush?
No. I've flown through Houston a few times.
Probably have it at other places, but like you're going through the parking garage and it's like you're going up the turn thing. Boom. It's like 100 parking spots in this level or 0 parking spots this level. It tells you how many are on that level.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's like that at Dulles or somewhere.
And
then
as you're driving down the aisles, it's like 4 parking spots this way or none this way, 3 over here. And then it's got little green lights all the way down or green and red. And then you just go to the green one.
Yep.
Pretty sure they stole that from Bucky's bathrooms.
Yeah, right. That's another place, Bucky bathrooms. That's a fucking genius idea.
It makes sense.
It does. Yeah. Saves so much time.
Yeah. I need that in my house. With three girls and three bathrooms.
Just put a little tap light up there so when they go
in. So, funny thing about the kids, like, we have three bathrooms in the house. We have two fulls and a half. And the kids always go to our bathroom.
Yep.
And pee all over the
seat. Probably bigger.
Like, yeah, well, no, actually, it's not. Like, the little closet is small. It's the smallest one in the house, like, where the toilet is. But it's like, we have three bathrooms. You have to walk all the way from your room, like, mm-hmm. all the way down the hall and come over to ours. Why?
Ours is because of the tub. We've got one of those, like, standing alone tubs.
Oh, right. Nice.
So, like, the girls are always in there. There's, like, there's ducks. I don't know where she got ducks.
They're like the clawfoot tub?
No, it's on the, it's on the floor.
Oh.
But it's basically like that one.
Nice.
Kids get in it. Everything. Anyway.
Yeah, so.
Parking, batteries.
Bathtubs.
Elon Musk.
Credit cards.
Yeah. But, well, back to credit cards and advertising and taking money, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, if you have enough money, you can advertise with pretty much anybody at this point. I'm not going to say the company, but Midway USA, they sure as fuck are running Facebook ads and YouTube ads.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. When you've. Yep. We got that Potterfield gold going on.
Well, they're spending probably more in a month than we make than we bring in a year just on ads. Yeah. Like,
that's insane. And then just the slew of just garbage holsters that are.
Oh yeah, I don't want to start naming.
Say names or anything, but yeah, it's. I have people all the time. They're like, they come to class or they ask, and it's like, hey, saw this holster on. I'm like, if you saw it on Facebook, Instagram, or something like that, no,
it's probably not
being marketed through those platforms. And
it's most likely,
yeah,
not any good. The what was that one that I was commenting on the day? It's the Enigma we have at home, and it was like it's like some dude just like took some canvas and sewed a pouch for your holster to get like your gun. Like it's pouch. Just a kangaroo pouch. I'm like, you're probably selling a bunch of those,
probably.
But anyway,
so on that note, welcome to the podcast. This is, you know what you're listening to. So I'm Ike, we got Chris, and we've got Hunter. He's been a guest a couple times, but this is the first time that he's flying solo. So
by myself.
Yeah. So hopefully this isn't too horrible. We'll see. If it is, it's on him. But
just hoping Chris and Ike drag me along for the ride.
Yeah, dude. Thanks for coming over today.
Yeah, thanks for coming down, man. They're up or over? It's probably more over.
Yeah, down and to the right.
Yeah. Because you're in New Braunfels now? Yeah. So it's we're a little bit east, southeast.
Just jump down on 10 and then just pick a fight with everybody in the left lane on the way here. It's just the 10. Easiest way to make it.
That's a bold move. I'd rather go back roads to San Antonio, New Braunfels area.
That adds like an hour at least. And then when you jump off 10 into Houston up to Conroe, that's another 45, 55 minutes. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I usually just put it in Maps or Waze, and then whatever it tells me, because there's always wrecks on 10.
Yeah.
And then going the back way, too, it's a gamble of, like, are you going to get stuck on this back road or whatever behind Grandma doing 35?
Like a coal truck or something.
Yeah.
At least on the interstate, I can.
Coming back from Green Ops, the Green Ops LPVO class 2 summers ago.
Oh, yeah.
Now.
Wow, it's been two already.
Yeah, it's been two summers since that. I had some sort of setting on my Google Maps that was like
avoid tolls,
avoid highways. And I'm just like burning through these little towns. I'm like, all right, cool. Got pulled over in one. It was cool. Left there and like it literally took me like I was going down one road and it's like, all right, your turn's coming up. I went by it and it was a gravel road and I turned around. I was like, all right, let's do this. Let's see what it's doing. And I hit the gravel road and it was like some cut through between one FM and another FM. Yeah. And like there was one point where it was like a one lane gravel bridge. I was like, this is the way to travel.
It's a shortcut.
If it wasn't hard, it would just be the way.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you might discover new land or territory back there. Yeah. Just get to name it.
Or die in a ditch. One or the other.
Hear banjos takes 4 playing months. In the background.
Yeah. So, Hunter, let's talk about where Hunter came from.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, let's go back.
Okay.
We've never had you on alone to where we can, like, go back into the the swamps of Louisiana, I believe it is.
So you want the origin story?
Well, he's more Shreveport area, right?
So, right? Yeah. But that's a common thing, right? Everybody thinks Louisiana is just all Bunan and bayous and poverty, which a third of that is correct. I mean, I was a pretty regular country kid. Like, we grew up in the middle of nowhere. So, a little town called Beekman, Louisiana, top right corner of the state, literally out in the middle of nowhere. The close thing to my house was a gas station. So, I spent a lot of time on my own. I grew up on a lot of property, about 350 acres. Had creeks, had, you know, everything that I wanted at my disposal. And really, just, I mean, I grew up in the woods. You know, I spent a lot of time. I got my first deer rifle when I was, you know, 7 or 8 or 9, somewhere in there. I enjoyed deer hunting and stuff growing up, but my huge passion was squirrel hunting. Like, I was just a squirrel exterminator from about ages 8 to 16. So I got my first red dotted pistol in 1999, 98, somewhere in there. It was a Ruger Mark II with an Aimpoint 2000 on top, or Aimpoint 3000, one of those. Didn't really know what to do with it back then. But ran around the woods of northeast Louisiana, shooting stuff with that for, you know, probably close to a decade. And that's where I talk about this a little bit in class and stuff. You learn a lot being on your own in the woods as far as, like, what you can shoot, what you can't shoot, what you should shoot, what you is outside of your capability, you know, how to respect animals and all that stuff. So spent a lot of time on my own as a kid, just, you know, with a gun in my hand. Not really knowing what I was doing, but enough to you know, learn how to hunt and kind of figure it out on my own. And, like, my favorite sort of tell, especially, like, small town country stuff, is slowly going away. I used to have a bus driver when I was in the second, third, fourth grade. It was Buff Buffington. He ended up dying a couple of years ago. But he would drop me off a mile from my driveway. And I had a little Ruger 10/22 stuffed in a dry sack underneath a bridge right there. He would drop me off, and he would drop me off there, and I'd grab that 22, and on the way home, walking just through the woods, getting back to my house in the back way, I'd shoot squirrels. I'd come home, and I'd have squirrels ready by the time that I walked in my driveway. So you think about reading that in the newspaper these days about a public school bus driver dropping a kid off away from his home to pick up a gun to walk through the woods and kill animals. Like, that dude's going to jail.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's, so a lot of my roots were spawned just, you know, running around shooting stuff in the woods, building forts and being a little, you know, being a crazy kid.
High school, you went into, I believe you were in the guard for a little bit.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So, coming out of high school, I played ball, right? Played football all 4 years, track and field, all that stuff. I had dreams and aspirations of going and playing college ball. Got some opportunities there, missed some opportunities there, just, you know, long story, fun stuff. So I kind of looked up towards the end of my senior year and I was like, man, what am I going to do? Right. Cause there's nothing in this town that I live in, right? The mill had shut down, and with the mill being shut down, there were just hundreds and hundreds of jobs that were just gone away that kind of started the fall of my little hometown, I guess you could say. And I figured out, like, I was like, man, I do not want to stay here. Like, I'm looking around. These are not talking bad about my hometown, but, you know, I have higher aspirations than, what I'm seeing around. So I kind of woke up one day and was like, well, obviously the military is the next step, maybe, possibly. So I went and talked to a recruiter, went to one of those little recruiting halls where it's like Marine Corps, Navy, Army, Guard, all that stuff. Everybody was gone. So I kind of stood around for a little bit and was like, all right, let's see where this goes. And the first dude that walked up in uniform, I was like, hey, man, I'd like to enlist. And he was like, what do you want to do? And I was like, I don't know. But he ended up being a guard recruiter, right? He was the one dude that showed up to work that day. So he pulls me in there. We're kind of looking at all the options on the board, right? And you remember the DVDs and the pamphlets and stuff.
We had a VHS, actually.
Yeah. Okay, so a little prior to that. Yeah. DVDs came out after VHS, my generation. And I remember this dude showing me this DVD, and it was of – I'm talking about sniper craft, ghillie suits, dune buggies, just – four-wheelers and just all kinds of cool stuff. I was like, well, that's obviously what I want to do. He was like, cool, man, that's a 19 Delta Calvary scale. I was like, well, that's obviously what I want to do. So go off to OSUT, Fort Knox, had a blast doing that, met a lot of great people, came back. I did some active time with the guard, like on orders and stuff. And I was also at the same time, I was like, man, this is fun, right? But it's not kind of fulfilling that thing that I want to do, right? So that kind of led its way to shooting more, training more, just trying to be better at my job. Because I was not, I will make no bones about it, I was not a great garrison soldier. Like, I got in trouble. Right, I got in trouble. I didn't like the peacetime side of the being in the military. I loved being in the field. I loved doing my job. I loved doing the scout stuff. But I hated the motor pool, and I hated all the drilling and inspection and all the stuff that comes along with having to do the military stuff. But I loved the training, and I excelled at that, and I got to do all that stuff that I wanted. But I realized about halfway through that process, I was like, man, I want to figure out a way to shoot more at the government's expense, right? So after I'd been in for about three and a half years, I went and tried out for the Louisiana State All-Guard Shooting Team, or the Louisiana State Guard Shooting Team, made it, and then got to travel for the next, you know, two or three, 4 years, going against shooting different matches and stuff like that. And that kind of opened my eyes up to what at the time I thought was really good shooting. It was a lot better shooting than I had been, you know, seen up to that point. And that just kind of started to open my eyes more and more about what was out there. Then you start getting exposed to guys at the AMU at the time, and I just saw those guys and was like,
yeah,
holy shit. So that kind of lit a fire and took off from there. Though I guess the biggest part of my origin story, obviously, is something we've talked about in the past. 2012, my sister was killed in Bossier City, Louisiana. And that took, man, it took years to kind of like come back out of that funk that put me in. But the idea behind it was, I remember the feeling of like helplessness and just despair. And I remember thinking, man, you know, I think a lot of that comes from just the unexpected, right? It's like not knowing what to expect or something catching you off guard. It's like, man, at least on the EDC LE side, like we can become prepared enough to where we have somewhat control over outcome, right? We don't always have complete control, but you know, you can get so good at certain things that you can expect certain outcomes and somewhat control them. So that is kind of what pushed me into the obsession of shooting, is, you know, just wanting to get really, really good at something to, you know, at a minimum I can control that part of the fight, right? So yeah, that kind of has been the driving force for, I guess now it's been close to a decade since 2012.
Yeah. So, what was your first, like, major open enrollment? Like, first named?
Oh, first class?
Yeah, first class that you went to that was, like, national level trainer or maybe even not a national level trainer.
So, I went to a J.J. Rakaza class.
Oh, nice.
2016. Which at the time was the biggest name that I had trained with. I had trained with, you know, lots of other guys prior to that. And then probably some names that other people would think were big, but I don't consider to be quality training anymore. But yeah, that was the 2016 up in Denver, Colorado. Took a J.J. Rakaza class at Centennial Gun Club. And it was mind blowing because it was the first class I'd gone to that was not tactical, I guess you could say. Like, you ran stages, you learned how to, you know, shoot doubles, you learned how to open your vision up. And that was super eye-opening. Like, that class started probably 16 months of just dogging it, right? So I had just come back from overseas at the time, and I took every spare penny that I had. I bought a range near my house, or I leased a range near my house. That was about 110 acres. Trained every day, traveled the country for a little over a year at that point, trained with just about every person that I could think was doing it right at the time, right? You know, Jared Rest and Bill Blauer, Scott Jelinski, Chuck Pressburg, just everybody that I thought was doing it correct at the time. I wanted to go get a piece of that, right? Not touch the magic, but I wanted to figure out, like, what are they doing that makes them so good at what they're doing? Whether mm-hmm. it be really good teaching or really good shooting, like, let's dissect that and go the extra step and figure out, you know, how can that be multiplied? Yeah. How can I get better at what I'm doing through that? And that was a lot of fun. Like, through that, I tell people all the time, especially my students, like, you have to learn how to enjoy the process. Right? It's not about the destination, not in this industry, because the thing that you think is going to get you there, it's going to be your final puzzle piece, is just the next puzzle piece. Like, it's the thing that you have to do before you do the next thing and before the next thing. Like, if you can enjoy the journey and just, you know, where it takes you and the people that you get to meet and the things that you get to do and achieve, like, that's where the money's at. It's, you know, enjoying the process.
It's always that one thing. It's always, like, I think the first, one of the biggest opening touch points I had in my training journey was pinky pressure. And I was like, people, what are pinkies? Like, and like, when I actually had somebody explain it to me where I understood how to actually make my hand do that, and I was like, oh my God, I can shoot faster. Mm-hmm. This is awesome. Yep. I'm not just like squeezing it so hard that I can't, but oh, look at that. And that's like that one puzzle piece unlocked like the next level of stuff. You're like, oh, I'm done now. Nope.
Hi, I'm Chris from Big Tech's
Ordnance, and I'm Ian from Big Tech's
Ordnance. And today we've got the weekly update. So first off, from Voltor is the classic Murr upper receivers, right? So we've got them in foliage green, black, standard black. Those are my picks. What do you got over there?
For all the wheel gun enthusiasts out there, we've started carrying some Safariland Comp 3 and Comp 2 speed loaders for J frames and K frames. So if you guys need a good speed loader for all of your revolver needs, we got some. We have the new Streamlight Wedge XT also. These come in black and FDE. Great little task light. You know, drop your keys underneath the couch. You're looking for your burrito. Good little option from Streamlight. Comes with a little lanyard on it as well.
Solid price point on those. I'll have to reference the price point on
USB-C
those.
USB-C rechargeable, and it has a deep carry pocket clip on it.
Yeah, so option.
Looks great.
Coming up, there's a bunch of classes. We've got Paradox training. Going to be across the street at the range. Doing that the 27th, not this weekend, but next weekend. Anyway, lots of training events coming up. We just also posted the Sons of Liberty.
Oh, yeah, the Armors
class. Armors class in May. It's up on the website. Anyway, thanks for watching.
Be safe.
Finger guns.
How many classes have you been to where the only talk of grip was, well, grip is very personal, so just grip the gun hard.
Yeah.
Like, I think the first 6 or 7 years of my shooting career, that was the best that it got.
Or like the 70-30 or, you know, the 60. Yeah. I'm like,
65-35. And I was like, dude, I went to a public school in Louisiana. You're not going to get me to do this math on the line around other people. It's not going to happen. But, I mean, that's been a blast to watch over the past, you know, 10 years. It's just watching every 2 or 3 years, everybody thinks that they know everything. And then, like, something will come along. And they're like, oh, yeah, well, we I agree with that. So let's start teaching that, not that. And then it just – every time everybody thinks they have it figured out, it just kind of shakes it up. But I also think everything comes around every 20 years, too. I see a lot of young instructors today – just regurgitating things that Rob Latham and Chip McCormick and Jerry Barnhart said 20 and 30 years ago. And it's like, well, give credit where credit's due. You know, we are in the age of information and content, but man, like, if you heard it somewhere, let others know that you heard it from them.
Yeah.
Only give you a little bit more respect on that end, you know, to retain honor, show lineage.
Yep. Cite your sources.
That's it. You have to. Have to. Because nobody's coming up with new stuff in this game.
Yeah, and that's a thing in general too. Like, I mean, there's probably not a lot of original thought anymore. Like, probably somebody somewhere has thought about that or done that, you know.
Yep. And then it resonated with somebody else, and it became a huge thing, which is awesome. Like, I remember parts of my shooting journey where I heard it said a certain way, and I was like, oh my God.
That's the other thing, too, is like you can hear the same like thing multiple times, but if you hear it in a different way, sometimes it speaks to different people differently. Yep. And sometimes that's all it takes is just rewording it or presenting the information in a different way for that little light bulb, you know, to kind of go off. And I know I've definitely experienced that.
Yep. Everybody gets different things from different perspectives.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a huge fan. You know, I don't do military or law enforcement stuff anymore. So like I tend to not gravitate towards those kinds of classes, right? Because that's not the language that I speak anymore. But I know a lot of cops and mill dudes that if they go to a class from, you know, like Scott or Donovan or somebody that, or Donovan's got, I guess, a mill background, but, you know, dudes that teach pure performance, not from a background of law enforcement or military, they just kind of have this, okay, well, I'll pick up what I can pick up, but, you know, I do the thing. And it's like, well, you don't shoot that well. That's what you're here for.
Yeah.
You know, just open your mind up a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, like there should be a separation between your tactics class and a shooting class.
Oh, yeah. You got TTPs and then you got pure performance over 100%. Here. So like Scott's not out there teaching, you know, 3-man CQB.
What was this?
Oh, the small unit tactics.
Tactics class that Scott was doing. Yeah.
Love the internet.
Yeah. For those of y'all that don't know, I guess they were up there with Jim Dexter at a range in Illinois or something, and part of the I guess the procedures at the range was requirement from the range was that you all had to be in soft armor. So Jim Dexter's up there, he posts a picture of everybody in their armor, and it was like Modern Samurai Project small teams or whatever it was,
small unit tactics.
Yeah. And the internet just exploded. What is he doing? He's just a Here's a good joke. It got a lot of hate stirred up in that in one post.
Yeah, the internet is vocal.
Yeah, for sure.
Good times.
That's the positive thing.
But you get good stuff out of the internet too. Yeah. Like a couple weeks ago, there was the Clint Smith. Is it Clint?
Yeah, Thunder Ranch.
Thunder Ranch, right? Clint Smith talking about shotgun ballistics, and he's like, "This is my 5-year-old daughter." Explain shotgun ballistics to the class, and it's like they've, you know, imposed him on the video of a bunch of kids sitting around a table, and Clint's like, if it's right distance of the right load, it will remove shit off the target. that's priceless. I will link that.
That's great.
We'll link that in the comments here. So, JJ Ricaza, then you started into the sheet of people, the list of trainers.
Yeah, I leaned in pretty hard because I realized that I knew what I wanted to do, but I realized that I wasn't where I wanted to be. I think it's a huge responsibility and a huge role to take upon yourself to charge other people money for your time to train them, right? And if you got to be worth it, you know, I talked with, I think it was Luke Brooks on the Greenhouse podcast about this. And it's kind of like, just because you can throw your name up on a group and start charging people money to teach them basic stuff, it's like you're interacting with somebody in hopes that you can affect some quality difference, possibly in the worst moment of their life. Like, You have a debt to these people to like give them the best product possible. Like, if you're going to charge somebody hundreds of dollars to teach them how to shoot, you better be able to fucking shoot. Like, you better be able to run the gun. Cause if not, you're just wasting their time and money, right? And you're giving them a false sense of security for the skills that you're thinking that you're handing them down when you're not. So I understood that responsibility and brevity pretty early on, where I was like, man, I'm not where I want to be. Right. So I instead of continually taking that money in, I stopped and went and invested money in myself and tried to build that skill set up as much as I could, both on the shooting side and the teaching side. And thankfully I've had a lot of incredible mentors and friends and teachers along the way that have been very patient with me and helped me out. So,
and you started You started teaching with Green Ops first? Or where was that in the
So back in the day, actually, my first teaching job was with a company owned by my buddy Stephen Moore called Sinla Tactical Group. And it was just Central Louisiana. We did, you know, anything from concealed carry classes to, you know, tactical shooting courses, which at the time was all we do. We both shot for the Louisiana team. Both of us were pretty consistent regulars as far as, like, I think we were both at least. I know I have both bronze EIC badges. I think Stephen was maybe distinguished in one, silver in another one. So, like, we had an understanding of, like, how to shoot at a high level. But there's a big difference between, like, combat matches in the Army where you're in full kit and you're doing 500-meter to 100-meter rundowns. And then, like, having to shoot a pistol correctly. Like, there's a massive divide there. So, yeah, that was – Steven gave me my start, trust me enough to let me stand in front of people and talk. And then from there, I had my first company, which was Hyde Training, which was just a learning opportunity for the most part. Like, I started that because I wanted to do it, and that's where I learned the most about this industry that I'd ever learned before, which was – you got to be able to market. You got to have a complete product, not just a partial product. And you got to know how to run a business, which I think is the part people forget about this. Like, at the end of the day, if you're going to take money from people, there's all this other stuff that goes along with that, that is not glorious. It's not glamorous. It's that has nothing to do with shooting. And
the administrative side.
Yeah. And like, it sucks.
Like credit card fees.
Like credit card fees, like we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
So I found that out the long way around.
So it's Hyde, H-Y-D-E, mm-hmm. right? How'd you come up with that name?
In my, you know, early 20s brain, there was this idea that, you know, H-Y-D-E, you had Jekyll and Hyde.
Oh,
you had the physical manifestation of violence, and then the appearance of safety, right? The scary character and the non-scary character. But it was the same person that could mm-hmm. just flip. The idea was that, you know, I heard it said years ago that, like, as a gun carrying individual, you need to be more like Superman than G.I. Joe. Like, you need to have that incognito look where it doesn't look like you're carrying a gun. And then boom, at a moment's notice, you pop into a phone booth and you turn into, you know, a hero. I have different thoughts on that now, but at the time that kind of made a lot of sense to me, especially on the Jekyll and Hyde side. But yeah, I mean, I attribute that whole experience as just being a really young kid in this industry, trying to bite off more than I could chew, and trying to, what's the word I'm looking for, wade the waters of this industry.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a great learning experience, man. I'm very thankful that I was able to get a lot of that stuff out of the way, you know, in my early 20s.
Fail early.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. Yeah. Fail early and try not to make those same mistakes again. So, but it was fun. You know, I had a lot of fun with Hyde. And then after that, moved to Texas. We evacuated Louisiana because it's Louisiana. And
nothing against Louisiana, but
everything against Louisiana. and the ironic part of, like, how we ended up in Texas was I actually came down, met up with my buddy Matt. At Sons Liberty, and just kind of showed me around and was like, this is what we're doing down here. I was like, man, it's a really cool place. This is back at their old location. Met Mike and Kyle and all those guys. It was a lot of fun. And just on the way back, my wife was with me, and we stopped in New Braunfels. Just looked up a little burger joint, stopped at a place called Muck and Fuss, and we sat there and ate lunch, had a little beer, and I was just kind of looking around. And there were little dogs and all the good beer in the world, and the food was really good. And I remember thinking, this is pretty great. So I looked over at my wife and I was like, hey, could you see yourself living here? And she looked at me and she goes, yes. We moved here 2 weeks later.
Holy shit.
Yeah. 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 Change is a good thing. I think if you're in a situation that's very static and it's, you know, you're not reaching the goals that you want and you're, you know, want to get more out of life than you're getting, man, uncomfortable, aggressive, violent change is a good way to set yourself on a new track. And moving to Texas was that for us. So it's been a lot of fun.
And that, what year was that? Did you move down here?
2019, end of 2019.
Okay. Yeah.
Came down, took the director of training job at McQueenie. Spent right out a year there, which was another incredible learning experience. Like, for an indoor range, you interact with people that you would never interact with in like a group class, like my MSP class. There's my owners classes. Those people like proactively seek out training, pay good money for it. And an indoor range, it could be a thought, like family outing one day, and dad's like, "Hey, let's take y'all by the indoor range and let's get Stacy and Janine and let's get everybody to rent you a gun. Let's go in there and figure out how to defend our lives." And that's a whole different kind of training, right? There's not much in the cup already. So being exposed to that was, I'm very appreciative of that experience, just that, you know, on the instructor side to, you know, be able to deal with people from all walks of life.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think the most fun I had on that side of was like being in a room full of people that some of them didn't have any want to actually be there.
Nope.
And they were either told they had to be there or somebody else had paid for them to be there. Yep. And they just wanted to check the block.
Yep.
And it was all you could do to change their mind. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you did.
Yeah.
And that was a win.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. But you meet a lot of incredible people like that. You know, like Deb being one of them. You know, Deb was just another lady that came in, had a story along with it, and she was like, "This is fun. I want to stick with this," and has stuck with it for 4 years now, at least once, one day a week, every week. Yeah, and that's why she's, you know, she came to the MSP class I did in Seguin about 3 weeks ago and ended up winning the 25-yard steel panel mandrel against a couple of retired SF dudes in that class, a couple of cops, you know, really capable guys. Yeah. And she just shows up and produces, you know, because everybody has an end goal, right? Everybody is doing this to appear a certain way, or they're doing this to be more capable in a certain way. And that was just there. She's just there to burn it down, right? And she looks, you know, like any lady out there, look, you know, just show up and cries and helmets and shit like that. She shows up ready to rock.
So for a little bit of context, who is Deb?
So Deb is a student of mine. She's a full-time vet in San Antonio. I don't know how much of her story she would want me putting out, but she lost her husband in a pretty tragic way about 5 or 6 years ago, and has used shooting and training and the obsession of getting better at that, and for the past 4 years to, I guess, you know, provide mental clarity and kind of build things back up no differently than I did 7 or 8, 9, 10 years ago for myself, right? So we all get something different out of it, just depending on the time that we find each other in. So
I think I've been in one or two classes with Deb, and it's always one, like, just standing there unassumingly, and it's my fault for just kind of just chilling out on the line and watching people and just be like, "What was that?" Like, just would not have assumed the skill level that she walks up to on the line and can put, like you said, a whole class full of people on their toes at 25 yards on steel.
And everybody thinks on, you know, when they show up to a class, they have their own personal experience mentally when they walk into that room and they wait on the instructor. Man, everybody's thinking the same thing. Like, you walk in and you're like eyeing people out, and you're like,
sizing everyone up.
Yeah, like, yeah. And like, everybody thinks that's a singular experience. It's like, no, man, everybody's concerned. Everybody's nervous. Everybody is sizing everybody up. Like, the sooner you get comfortable, the sooner you learn better. The sooner you learn better, the sooner you get your money's worth and you make the time valuable. And she goes through that too. You know, she'll call me before class and be like, "I don't know." It's like, "Yeah, you do. Show up." And she shows up and burns it down. So much so that she, you know, I forget to talk about other, like, really good students of mine, right? Because she steals the show so often. But, you know, there's guys like my buddy Jax. Jax the plumber on Instagram. Dude showed up to one of our classes a year and a half, 2 years ago. And the kid is smoking people now. Like, he's running, you know, 150, 160 bills from concealment, just doing great stuff. Yeah, so it's fun to watch. as much as I enjoy, you know, the occasional achievement and getting times and accuracy and all that stuff on certain drills and competing and all that, man, nothing gets me more excited than watching folks that have come through class and then they go train their ass off and they come back and you're like, dude, you've obviously been putting in the work. Like that's where it's at. That's fun to watch. And it's, I think that's truly the greatest compliment you can give an instructor is to learn something.
Yeah.
Go put it to work and then come back and show what you've, the changes that you've made.
Yeah. Show the improvement.
Yeah.
Down the road. Cause you've stayed with it mm-hmm. and done it. So let's talk about achievements right now. What are you working on? Like you've got, did you get the samurai patch from concealment?
No. So instead of concealment, I had this idea to do it strong hand only. Mm. So I've got three prior to this. Kind of the cutoff is three, right? You can get three, and then like you got to do the next time you do it, you have to do it in some extravagant way, yeah. right? So Donovan did it underneath nods. My goal was to do it strong hand only. So about 3 months ago, we were shooting, taught a class up in Missouri. Ozark School of Gunfighting up there. Great guys. Got the 3-2 strong hand only. I think it was like 160 something, and then got the draw at like 82. And then we go to the bill, dropped like a 160 bill, won about a half inch low out of the A zone. So it's like, all right. So that took a little bit of the fun out of it. But so I think my goal for 2024 is to make a really good hard push in USPSA, right? So I shot a lot of you. I say I shot a lot. I shot a good amount of USPSA in Louisiana at Miklik's Club, the Bossier Paris practice shooters. Met a lot of great people there. Had a lot of fun, and it helped me become a better shooter. So, yeah, 2024, the goal is to go ahead and make up that 1 point I need in CO for master and then push for GM and limited optics. Make that staccato scene.
Yeah.
So that's my goal. That's what I'm spending time and effort into this year. I just think it's the next step in the process. There's a kind of this idea in the shooting world that it's like coins, patches, and stuff don't matter, which is oftentimes said by dudes without coins and patches. Which is funny to me. But universally, I think USPSA is the good kind of common ground where you can be like, oh, okay, well, this dude has met the standards of this classification.
It's a good objective kind of metric to judge people on. Yeah. Like, obviously, it's not the end-all be-all, but like if you've achieved Grandmaster, like that's
– you didn't do it on accident.
You did do it on accident. Sure. Yeah, like that's a – you can't fake your way there. Mm-hmm. You know?
You put the work in.
Yeah.
You put the work in multiple – you probably put the work in every day.
Yeah. And there's – there's, and you know, it's important to like split time between like instructor development and your hard skills development. Like I still train shooting a lot, but I'm also very interested in just overall instructor breakdowns and explanations of, you know, making a bomb-proof POI and connecting with the individuals that come to class. Right. So instead of thinking of it as a group of people that have come to hear you talk, it's 24 individual people that you have to interact with and kind of not take them by the hand, but like training with a gun in your hand gets some people pretty tied up mentally. So like I'm big on like talking to people like human beings. And you know, one of the weird parts about my class, I'm gonna put my hands on you. Like I'm not gonna punch you and choke you, but like I'm gonna walk up and put my hand on your back. I'm gonna tap you on the shoulder, and we're gonna hold hands, and we're gonna talk about grip, and we're gonna get into that nitty gritty part of it, because those are the things I remember that helped me out the most when dudes came off the line and kind of had these side to side conversations, and were like, hey man, this is actually what I'm doing, or you know, this is how I'm pulling the trigger, or this is how I'm doing all these small things. I learn better from that than I do just hearing stories about Route Tampa and 03 Iraq or something. So that was a goal. Constantly try to polish my product for it to be as easily digestible as possible.
Where do you look, if you want to talk about, where do you look for stuff like that? What are you doing specifically to polish your product?
So things that resonate with people, like analogies, you know, things that I make no mistake. Like I lead a very weird, gifted life, right? Like not everybody gets to travel the country and spend all of their time on ranges and shooting with good dudes and meeting great people. So like, if I just sit up there and talk about my experience as a full-time shooting instructor, like that's not applicable to 99.99999% of people that I'll ever come across. So, like sports analogies help a lot because everybody has played a sport at some point.
Right? Yeah.
You know, being able to translate through things that we do on a daily basis, like drive, stand and talk to people, you know, all that stuff doesn't change just because we put a gun in our hands. Right. And I think we've spent a lot of time in the past trying to teach people what it should look like instead of like what it actually is. Right. So, yeah, I guess that's one of the big things right now is just constantly bringing in as much information and content as possible to, you know, what is the best way? I say it. Scott says it. You know, the greatest instructors are the greatest thieves. So you didn't make it up on your own. You can definitely give your own experience with it. But, you know, as long as you show where you got it from, it's all good. So.
Yeah, I think part of it's, you know, you obviously have to have the hard skills and the ability to actually perform. But another part of it that sometimes gets overlooked, I think, is the ability to, like, communicate information, you know, relay information effectively. And a lot of people, I think there's a lot of people out there that are good shooters but can't really convey that information over. Yeah. So it's kind of lost, you know.
Yeah, because some dudes are just athletes.
Yeah.
Right? And the combination of hand-eye coordination and quick twitch muscles and all that stuff comes together in shooting, or they've just shot a million rounds and figured it out.
Yeah.
Right? Well, that's, you're not going to shoot a million rounds in class. Yeah. You get at most 16 hours with your end user. So, it's not enough to touch the magic. You have to leave something with them, whether that be the ability to practice, what to look for, something to chase, you know, we're all getting there differently.
Yep. Putting out the good information and putting it out well.
Sure.
That's one. I mean, we'll talk about it. You are an MSP endorsed instructor, and Scott was in that chair. I mean, it might still even be warm.
Yeah, just a couple days ago.
Yeah, just a couple days ago, you know, and he conveys very good information. He explains it very well. And there's a third point there before I get to the fourth one. The fourth one being, or the third one, depending on how you look at it. The fourth one is, he can put it out, and it's entertaining when he puts it out, so you retain it more, in my mind, which is why he's a very good instructor.
Yeah, people can identify with that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, just watching, going back and watching the podcast, getting shorts and stuff this over the weekend and this last week, I'm like, he says that well.
Yeah.
You could have said it a million different ways, but the way he said that,
you're going to remember that.
It's going to be well received by everybody because it wasn't too complicated.
Yeah.
And it was slightly funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's engaging, you know.
So you can't just be able to touch the magic. You have to explain the magic and explain it well, I think.
Yeah. It's you can't just have one part of the puzzle. You know, I think it was Petty. Everything is a couple years ago. Like 8 years ago, I read two things on a post that he made for like up and coming firearm instructors. Like, here's my advice for you. And the two things that resonated with me. The first one was, you got to find a mentor, right? Show up early to class, offer to shag targets for people, like engulf yourself in that surrounding. Which I think every instructor, everybody that wants to become an instructor, needs to be training underneath somebody. Like, you can by all means go make all the mistakes on your own. You can. That's going to be hard to come back from. like, if that were the way to do it, I would have made it years ago. Find a mentor. But the other thing is, he made a comment to the extent of like being able to congrats, like you can shoot well, good. That gets you a ticket to the party. But once you get there, you gotta dance on your own. You gotta do all the extra stuff on your own. The being able to shoot part is the standard, right? The issue is most people have been below the standard for a long time, right? You have to be able to shoot well. You have to be able to teach well. You have to be able to put those two sides of doing and knowing, and you have to put it in the middle, wrap it up nicely, and deliver it to somebody carefully. And I remember reading those two things, and there's a lot of things that I've learned in my journey as an instructor, but those two things I remember a lot is, you know, you need somebody above you to help you, right? You need your little square of friends, as Jim Dexter says it. And then you've got to be able to do the thing that you're teaching your students. You have to, right? If you can't do it, who are you to teach it? Like, if you are teaching a 1.5 second draw at 25 yards, or you're teaching recoil control and you can't control your recoil, like, what are you doing? Why are you teaching that? So, yeah, it's not enough to be able to do it. That just gets you a ticket there.
So, speaking of Will, I think he's probably one of the – he's a pretty good, like, I guess, example of running a business in the training world. I think he's been pretty successful at that, you know, developing a good curriculum, a good – like, he's got a lot of good foundations there.
It's been around for a long time now.
Yeah.
Multinational.
Yeah, this industry is not known for its longevity, as far as instructors go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially not in the modern era. Like, you just don't see guys stick around for.
But I remember when it was him and Steve Fisher running around, you know? Like, it was that. And then, you know, the VCQB and developing that program. And
early on.
Yeah, and getting it adopted so widely. And then the mantle clothing that they have, and, you know, all the whole Centrifuge has become, you know, pretty big training entity, I guess.
Too bad he's so anti-podcast, because Will would be a good guest.
And he's not that far away.
Yeah, he was down here 2 weekends ago for
a lot of juicy drama to soak out of that podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, we could get all sorts of hate clicks. And
yeah, we could get it. He came down for Ruben's class 2 weeks ago.
Oh,
yes. Nice. Petty came down for 1 day of that with Paradox, because he's been – it appears as if he's went into the Craig Douglas training junkie, because he's been doing some ECQC stuff with those boys. And
that's on my horizon too. I started jiu-jitsu last year, and I'm still bad at it, right? But I've gotten pretty good at knowing how to get my ass beat and not be out of breath at the end of it, which is half of the fight.
Yeah,
because the first couple months, it's like there's nothing worse than like getting your shit pushed in and not being able to breathe.
Yeah,
you're and not knowing how to get out of it.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
My I think everybody should experience. Like, I'm not saying you should make a life out of jiu-jitsu, because everybody has time and priority for their own things. But I think everybody should have to go through one gym, just maybe 1 or 2 days, just go up there and just roll with, you know, somebody that knows what they're doing, and you will find out that, you know, Scott says it like this: you're not the meat eater that you think you are.
Well, I remember like skills. Being like, you know, I forget how old we were, probably like 12 or 13 or whatever, but we'd always be wrestling, like all our buddies, you know, we'd have wrestling stuff. And then like there was like 4 or 5 of us, and we got to be kind of knew each other, you know? So like we knew how to hold our own against each other, you know? And then like we were somewhere, I forget where it was, but there was like some new kids. And dude, I personally got my ass handed to me. I was like, oh, and this was like a long time ago, you know, being young, but I was like, oh fuck. I was just like overpowered, you know, just like, that was a weird feeling.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's nothing you can do.
Yeah. It's just like fuck.
My, which I hadn't been back in a little bit, but my professor, at SBG in New Braunfels, it's just, you know, he's so graceful with everything that he does, right? So, like, we were rolling, or last time we were rolling together, and he'll just close his eyes. Just do all the things. And it's like, dude, come on.
Yeah.
Like, make me feel better about this. You know, he's pushing my shit in. Not, you know, not breathing hard. Eyes aren't open, you know.
Relaxing.
Yeah.
He's actually not even there.
He's, like, on the phone with his Bluetooth or whatever, you know, just having, like, a normal conversation.
Yeah.
You know, no.
Fixing internet problems or something.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, that's fun. I like seeing anybody that's really good at what they do.
Like, yeah, because they make it look so effortless. Yeah. Like, it's just like, and you're watching like, oh, I could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Until you can't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fun.
No, but that's how you know you're like a true, or somebody is a true master of what mm-hmm. they do, is when they can do something extremely difficult and mm-hmm. make it look so easy and so simple. Yeah. Like,
yeah, it's fun to watch.
And speaking of being a master, what's your game plan to get your USPSA goals for next year?
So starting, I actually leave, what's today? Monday. I think
11?
I leave 11. Wednesday to go spend a day with Sean Griffith in Florida or Georgia.
Somewhere over there.
I fly in one of those states. And just,
hopefully it's the right one.
Yeah. I either start in Jacksonville and I end in Georgia, or I start in Georgia and end in Jacksonville.
You fly in Delta?
No. Oh. American.
Okay. I was going to say Delta's Atlanta, you know, big hub there. So,
yeah. So spend a day with Sean Griffith. My big thing is not necessarily the trigger pulling part. It's getting this body moving again, right? I'm not as agile as I used to be.
How old are you now?
So I'm 32.
Okay.
But I'm a few knee surgeries in.
Okay.
And people make this joke all the time that, like, you don't get more active the more you start traveling, right? So, like, Scott's talked about it. I mean, Will's talked about it. Everybody that's on the road kind of has this understanding that, you know, when you fly all day, and you finally get to where you're going, and you want to go to sleep, and you wake up the next morning, you teach all day. And the last thing I want to do is come back to my hotel and work out.
Yeah.
That's slowly changing and getting better, but I have allowed that to get out of control in like the past year. So past couple months, getting back on my toes, my feet, sort of moving things again. And, you know, I haven't been athletic in 10 years, so I gotta get back into that. But getting Sean to get my entries and exits a little bit more clean, get my gun up sooner, get out of the position a little bit sooner. That and just stage expectations, like how to read an array of targets and be like, all right, I'm gonna start here and have a better like I can break a stage down now, but just the understanding of like I want that mathematical view of a stage, right? Like these targets are worth X amount, but it takes me this amount of time to get over here.
Yeah.
And I should reload here because if I wait to do it here, then I have to do it there. And I don't want to do it there because I have less time to move than here. And that part is intriguing to me.
So just a little bit ago, you said sooner rather than faster. And you said it a couple times.
Yep.
Was there a reason for that, or is that just...
Yeah. So, and I'm sure we've all done this, right? Anytime that you want to do something fast, right? My favorite thing is to watch dudes when we give them the two runs on like 3-2 or the draw or something in class, and they'll get that first run. They're like, hell yeah. And you can just see it in their head. They're like, all right, I'm going to go fast this time. And it's kitchen Bro! Sink, whoosh. And it becomes chaos. So the second that we do something fast, your brain doesn't go, okay, well, what he means is not fast. He just means very efficient. And most people don't know what fast is anyways. But, like, sooner, that translates a little bit better, right? So instead of, like, getting out of my position faster and more aggressive, I can just spend less time in the position by shooting when I'm supposed to shoot and then immediately doing the next thing, which is moving. So move when you got to move, shoot when you got to shoot. Which is the truest sense of follow through. Like do the thing that is required of you until it's no longer time to do it, and then do the next thing. You're just blending that half second between I have to do this and I have to do this. When I've got to shoot and I've got to move, I can also shoot a little bit while I'm moving and then rock and roll into it. So that's the goal, you know, for this week, next week, and the next couple of weeks is entries and exits and being more efficient on stage.
Any big matches that you know you're going to shoot this year? Or next year?
Oldfield Classic. I'll go to that one. I'm not familiar with all the Texas matches, so I need to get more familiar. You know, in Louisiana, you have the Gator Classic and matches like that. But I got a couple of buddies that do the local matches, so I'm going to attach to them and rock and roll.
I need to get into it. We've talked about doing a quantified performance a little bit, because that's kind of our wheelhouse right now. I really want to do some steel challenge. Like, that's how I want to get back into, like, pistol shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Is go do some steel challenge, because it's fun.
That was actually one of my first real classes. I was commissioned Morris Parish Sheriff's Office in 2015. And I went to a four or five day sniper school up in Missouri. And it was, I kind of looked up halfway through that class and was like, God dang, this is way more intense than I thought it was going to be. So at the time I thought I wanted to do precision rifle stuff. And then, on the budget of a broke 23-year-old kid, I was like, man, all right, let's not do that. So, yeah.
It still challenges a lot of fun.
Oh, still challenges a blast.
Yeah.
And gets you comfortable drawing from high hand and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So what you got coming up? What's next?
So just, you know, kind of preparing for 2024. My goal for, you know, teaching in 2024 was just to teach more than I did last year. So right now I think I'm AIing about 20, 25 classes for Scott. Wow. Did about the same amount last year.
That's
but
a
I'll
lot, though.
Teach a lot more of my own classes in 2024. So I think right now I've got close to 20 on the books that are just my classes with an expectation.
That's probably, almost a full schedule right there, man. That's
I'm not Scott and Will and the other guys.
I don't know
that
how
have
they
this
do
goal
it.
To do 100 classes
God,
a year.
That terrifies me.
That's tough, man. I could not imagine because it's consistent. Like I get maybe doing it for 2 or 3 months.
So I'm over here doing math. You know, 52 weeks in a year. Yep. You got 100. So
it's at least two classes
a week, man.
That's 4 days multiple travel sick. Days.
Yeah, there's no pushing stuff off for weather. There's nothing. You know, you got to do it.
There's no calling in sick on Monday.
No, there is no, it's too cold.
Yeah.
We're not going to do this one.
Yeah.
I taught a class in Missouri last year, where actually up at your buddy's place, not Jim's place, but that's where I met Jim, Shanahan. Not quantified performance, but practical performance or something
advanced
like that.
Advanced
performance shooting.
Yeah. Advanced performance shooting.
And dude, the entire time we were on the range, it didn't get over 20 something degrees the entire class. I remember thinking, I'm good with one of these. And then I went home and I invested in hundreds of dollars of hollies and thermals and Arc'teryx stuff. I'm like, never again.
Yeah. If you are in central Missouri and you're looking for a sleeper class of somebody that nobody knows he's there, except for local, Jim's a hidden treasure.
Yep.
Of information and has been doing it for a long time in multiple formats.
He's been cutting on Glocks and holsters for 40 years.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. He's been pulling triggers and teaching for some sort of government agency for a long
super nice
time.
Guy too.
Yeah, so good dude.
If that's important to you, in your training search of your instructor's got to be a nice guy. That's Jim's a winner.
He's a good dude. For sure.
Everybody looks for different stuff in instructors. I prefer the dude that I'm paying money to be a decent human being. Yeah. Now here's the flip side of that, though. I don't go to classes expecting to get taught how to become an alpha male or, like, to be a better dude or something like that. Like, it's my job. But I see a lot of this, you know, I go to this class to touch the magic and be a more deadly animal or something. It's like, all right, good luck. That dude can't shoot either, but good luck.
So where can people find out more information? So let me back that up. So you're teaching for MSB, your own classes, and as AI.
Yep.
You're still with Green Ops? Still
nope.
doing?
No. Nope. So Matt, and that was kind of the end goal, or I say end goal, Matt, I don't know if you guys follow my boy Matt or not.
Oh, yeah.
Matt's absolutely killing it. He is now the director of training for Texas Green Ops. I think Matt's doing probably 40 classes a year, you know, anything from pistol to rifle to shotgun to, I think they're going to come out with some DMR courses this upcoming year.
He just got done with Ridgeline. He was up there for a week.
Yeah. I think he ended up getting Top Shot or something like that. So that he has done a remarkable job in building that program from the ground up. And that's all the work that I think can be put on his plate. And I'm going to end up having to steal him back a little bit, right? Because this year we are unrolling Onus finally. Daniel, how hard I want to talk about that right now.
You can talk about it a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, I can only say so much. The but Onus, like my company, Matt and Jeff's company, the training side of it will start to get rolling this year, as well as the product side. So we should start cutting metal here in the next couple of days. We have a class in March up in Dallas. We're going to do a pistol performance class for it's a private club up there. But we should you should start seeing more Onus Group classes on different schedules and stuff. Nice. So exciting stuff. Glad to finally get that into fruition. You know, the past year of just dealing with, you know, bad manufacturing and bad people to not do business with. It feels really good to be, have a good manufacturer, have good business partners, you know, have all of this stuff heading in a good direction, where we can see the light in the tunnel of, you know, ending up with a good product, good training, all that stuff. So
good shipper.
Yeah. And great, great distribution.
Yeah.
Obviously.
That's how it happens. One other thing that we haven't touched on, and I don't know if we've talked about it or not. How did you end up doing in your beard competition? Did you end up doing a beard competition?
So I was supposed to go do one in Austin. And then I decided not to do it. Yeah. Big. So here's the thing. Every time I knew you were going to get this. Yeah. Every time I put out a, you know, I try to, Scott's on me, everybody's on me about do more content on the internet. And I hate the internet. I hate content. I hate this industry of advertisement that we're in where it's like you don't have to be good at what you're doing. You just got to have a good camera and get a good drill on camera from time to time. So every time I put a question, I'm like, hey, let's talk shooting, or I'll be on the road, or I'll be on a flight. I'm like, hey, let's talk shooting. The first 15 DMs that I get are like, hey, what kind of beard stuff do you use? And I was like, the last thing I'm going to do is try to cultivate that interest.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to post anything about it. I'm not going to answer that. I'm
just going to own the beard oil coming out.
Nope. I hate it. I hate it. If y'all knew how ugly my chin was, you'd understand why I have this thing.
So I've seen pictures of you before the beard. Yeah. I was like, holy shit. Yeah. Don't cut it.
Yeah. It's a different human being.
It is totally like.
Yeah. It's a little baby chin back.
I know.
And also that he's got a secret weapon. Your wonderful wife.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And he's also got his hat on. Mm-hmm. Right. And if under his hat, unlike myself, who has no hair,
lots of hair.
He has lots of hair. Yeah. And in fact, my wife, when the first time my wife met you, mm-hmm. we were at the Christmas party last year.
Oh.
Right? The Christmas party that you attended last year. Mm-hmm. And my wife
said, start of my long
who's hair. Your friend with the hair? I'm like, what do you mean my friend with the hair? You mean my friend with a beard? She's like, no, he's got really nice hair. And then I'm sitting here, I'm like, wait a second. I don't have any hair. All right. Now you're not getting me. You're not meeting Hunter.
Yeah. So that was another thing. I kept my hair short, shaved all the time. And it's at some point you just want to kind of figure out like how homeless can you look?
Yeah.
To get away with it. And my wife is an absolute saint and just lets me kind of go off on these multi-month tirades of different experiences. So yeah, she's a real trooper. So,
well, you'll have to bring her next time you're on the show.
For sure. She would absolutely die. So as socially awkward as I am, she's 10 times worse. So that's probably what draws us in together.
Fantastic. Where can people find you?
So,
on the internet that you don't like.
Yes, the internet that I don't like. The easiest way to contact me is probably Instagram. Just add me on Hunter Freeland or at Hunter Freeland. My schedule is slowly trickling, being updated and stuff on the Modern Samurai Project page. You can also check out some upcoming stuff on onusgroupllc.com. Subscribe there, and then it will kind of force send you an email like once a month as far as like where we're at, what we're doing, kind of the expectations of when our product's going to roll out and stuff like that. So rolling out plates first, and then we've got lots of stuff in the backlogs after that.
Oh, nice.
So fantastic. The goal is not to be just a plate company per se, but to be a company that provides slightly better options or helps facilitate the use of other products better or stuff like that. So
cool.
Got a lot of stuff coming up.
Cool. You got anything for him?
No, I think that's it.
If you've tuned in this whole entire time, we really appreciate it. Check him out at all the places that he just talked about. Ask him about his beard more, or don't. And then stay
leave
tuned.
Red.
Stay tuned for his 2024 journey, which sounds like a lot of fun. And hopefully next time we have you up here, we'll be able to do some content on the range.
Heck yeah. Yeah, you guys just handle the content. I'll just sit back and smile and try not to say anything stupid.
We appreciate that. And we appreciate you for watching and listening, downloading, and leaving a 5-star review on whatever you're doing this on or consuming this on. We appreciate it. Stay strapped for Get Clapped.